Now you're all listening for the second bounce, right? Okay, House Judiciary has come to order. It's well after 1 p.m. It's probably a lot closer to 2 p.m. Monday, February 13th. Members present are Representative Thompson, Representative Keller, Representative Greenberg, Representative Holmes, and myself, Rep. Gatto. A couple of members are busy in Washington, so we'll just deal with the members we have here. First order, housekeeping, blah, blah, blah. Turn these babies off. We have one new bill and two previously scheduled bills. We'll take them up in this order. House Bill 216, Regulations, Informative Summary, / Bills. Is that correct? That's a tough one for me. Oh, and Representative Lynn has just showed up. So, and there'll be two other bills. We'll get to them shortly. Let's go right to the bill. We've had it in committee for several days now. It's probably time to move it along. And I think we have an amendment to the bill that apparently is going to be acceptable to the sponsor.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Gruenberg.
Representative Gruenberg, that's the one.
Susan, we've adopted the R version, right? Okay. I wanted to first put on the record that we delayed this because I had a question about the effective date in Section 2, and Representative Wilson has said that that is the appropriate effective date, so that's fine with me. After having talked to the folks in the Department of Law, they reviewed the other boards and commissions that are not listed on page 2, lines 2 through 5, that meet on a more or less continuous basis. And the only other board or commission they found that was not in that list was the Alaska Energy Authority. And this time, I would like to move that we add a conceptual amendment adding to the list of boards and commissions in Section G on page 2, lines 2 through 5, the Alaska Energy Authority, and would ask the chair if he wants to check and make sure that's okay with the sponsor.
Agree?
I agree full-heartedly.
Sponsor agrees. Conceptual amendment to add AEA to the list on page 2. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, then vote that amendment number 1. Amendment number 1 is adopted. That brings us back to the bill. I think we've talked about it enough. Somebody want to add any comments? No comments to be added. Anyone in the audience want to add comments? No one in the audience wants to add comments. Anyone online? Seeing and hearing none to all of those questions, Representative
Rick Barry moment.
Okay, we're going to
just bring it out.
This introduce the CS for House Bill 216.
Version, are we moving it?
Version R?
Version
to
R.
Move
R.
To move it.
Removing with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
As amended.
As amended. Conceptually amended.
Conceptually. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill CS for House Bill 216, Version R, moves from committee, advancing to the next step. Sorry it took so long.
Thank you very much.
That brings us to
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
The escape bill is not yet ready for prime time. They're still working on the definition of correctional facility. I would hope that we could possibly have it ready for Wednesday under bills previously heard, but they're not ready yet.
If they're not ready, we're not ready.
Yeah. That's our theory.
So we escaped from that one.
Ha ha ha.
Ha ha ha. So what do we have left now?
We got Miss Tammy.
Tammy's here.
Oh,
Tammy.
Property. Okay. Yeah. So, Senate Bill. Oh,
I am sitting.
Would you mind coming forward and sitting there?
That's so nice, sir.
Representative Miller, it is a dream to have you sitting there.
Wilson.
Yeah, them too.
This is for the world.
Oh my goodness.
Chair.
Okay.
Okay, and we have several people that want to chat with us. Let me borrow your pen here. Just a second.
Version X, is that the version that everyone's got?
I'm not sure.
X.
Let's sign this while we're in progress here. An act providing for the release of certain property. I think this is Senator Dyson's bill?
Yes, I'm here as Senator Dyson, incognito as Representative Wilson.
Got it.
Sir.
I hardly could tell it. Never mind.
Be careful.
So go ahead and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 11, and I'm honored today to be carrying Senate Bill 30, which is about restorative justice. When a victim of a crime has their property held as evidence by law enforcement agencies, it could be months or even years before they are able to have their possessions returned. By holding a victim's property as evidence for a prolonged period of time, extra burden is placed on the property owner to replace what has been taken as evidence. The consequences are even higher for small business owners who may face bankruptcy if their property loss is a crucial component of their daily operations. SB 30 will introduce a process for victims of property crime to petition the court for relief in recovering their property held as evidence. With me to provide further information on SB 30 is Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Dyson, and online, I'm hoping, we have Victor Kester, the Executive Director of the Alaska Office of Victims' Rights. And within it, I gave packets to all the members, is several stories of where people literally now are not claiming being victimized because they're afraid of how long that their property will be held. And this is for people who are victims, not for people who are committing the crime.
Right. In fact, we had a letter from a gentleman. They took his, there was a traffic accident.
Mm-hmm.
Not his fault, but there was a death. So they impounded his vehicle.
And trailer.
And the trailer, and it's been forever.
It's been since January of last year, and they still currently have it.
Yeah. So sometimes our bureaucracies advance with glacial speed, and we want to make sure that this doesn't hamper businesses from being able to continue with their business. I notice it has 17 sponsors from mm-hmm. the other body, so.
And we're hoping you will all be on this side as well, sir.
17? Is that all you want?
That'd be a good starting number. 21 would be nicer.
Okay. So, committee members, questions for Representative Wilson? Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to have anybody from the Department of Law to answer?
We have several people that will talk.
That's great.
I believe they may be online, sir.
Yeah, I'll ask them.
That would probably be a good idea.
We have the troopers and the Executive Director of Victims' Rights. And
we have yet to find anyone who has been opposed to this as
yeah.
well. And so whoever you'd like to listen to first.
Hard enough.
Yes, sir, of course.
And you would.
Look at the House Judiciary now.
I have a question.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is, we're adding a new section in here. I'm wondering, how does it work now for something to be, I'm wondering because under here, the person whose property it is can petition and then it goes through and it goes to a hearing. Does the agency have the right now just to return property, or does it always go before a hearing? I just want to make sure we're not slowing down the process in some cases rather than speeding it up.
I think if you let Mr. Kopp speak to that, he can give you all the things, and otherwise I would just be making up an answer.
Thank you.
So,
I see the Senate sponsor nodding his head, so I'm sure they've got an answer.
Yes, this will be fun. Can you put yourself on the record and tell us your background?
Thank you.
How long does he have?
Chair Mercado and House Judiciary Committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present this bill. Like Representative Wilson said, it the purpose of the bill and the spirit of the bill is to restore victims to a pre-offense status. I'm a retired law enforcement in Alaska, more than 20 years. I worked all over.
Your name?
My name is Charles Kopp.
Spell the last name for
K-O-P-P.
Okay.
And I'm
the
staff to Senator Dyson, the sponsor on the Senate side. Briefly through the chair to answer Representative Holmes' question, there's nothing that prohibits the crime victim property owner from working it out right now, but they don't have a process in the law to guarantee them a voice if they can't work it out. If it's at an impasse and they just can't seem to agree with the parties involved, there can be multiple interests to release the property back to the property owner.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, because I think that addresses my concern, that would still be available to them if they can just work it out. They don't have to go to a hearing, and that can all happen. We're not slowing the process down unwittingly. We're hopefully just giving them an avenue if they can't work it out to actually get the judge to weigh in.
Yes, through the chair. Yes, Representative Holmes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Other members with questions? Representative Bloomberg?
Mr. Chair, I have, I think, four questions so far. And I don't know who among the potential witnesses ought to answer the questions. And so I would ask the witnesses sort of to keep track of my questions, and whoever is the appropriate witness should answer them. My first question, if I may sort of go
ahead.
Thank you. It says a crime victim who was the owner.
Where are you reading?
Lines 5 and 6 on
page
1.
Page 1,
5
and 6. Okay.
Who's the owner of the property may file the petition, may make the request. In some cases, though, there may be several people who have claims to the ownership of the property. For example, let's say there are jewels that are purloined, as we say in the trade. And we have a little bag of jewels. And there are several people involved. There have been robberies of several jewelry stores. I think, and I'm not sure how this will play out, but this could have interplay with a body of law that's called interpleader. And interpleader is recognized in the civil rules, in the green book that's by Melanie there. There's a rule on interpleader, and an interpleader action is if somebody holds a piece of property, real or personal, and there are several people who make claim to it, they can file an interpleader action in the court, and the court then will make a determination as to who is the true owner. And I'm not sure if we need to do a tweak in the bill in some manner, because if we have a case that's over or whatever, then this could turn into a basically an interpleader action, and we have to be sure that, number one, the court notifies the potential owners or whoever it is, the prosecution who holds the property, and that the action permits the court to make that adjudication. That's my first question. Deals with the ownership of the property and who has the standing to make this request and request an adjudication. That's my first. My second is this. It talks about a hearing, but it seems to be in many of these cases you will not need a hearing. And what we have in the bill, it requires a hearing. And court takes a while to schedule a hearing. They're very backed up in some cases. And number two, it takes a lot of time to get them calendared and get everybody together. It would seem to me that we should be discussing, instead of requiring a hearing, talk about a decision by the court. And then it's up to the court whether or not a hearing needs to be scheduled. Because in many of these cases, it could be solved by simply a stipulation, which is a document signed by the parties and then approved by the court. That's my second. And the third is that it talks about where the hearing shall be held. And I'm looking now on page 2, line 5, where the property is located. It may be that in our jewelry, the case of the purloined jewels, it may be that the crook has fled to Nome and the jewels have been held in Nome. But the court case proceeds in Anchorage, where everybody is. And I think the question of venue is something that's normally judged by venue rules, which are currently in statute and court rule. And I would recommend we not limit the court to, quote, where the property is located. Raising those issues, asking people if they wanted to comment on them, because I can see, with all due respect, those might be things that we need to address in this bill. Any comments to the chair?
You said you had four?
I combined a couple of them.
Well, there we go.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm ready to respond. Thank you, Representative Grunberg, for those good questions. The answer to your first question about the appeal process, if you have multiple parties claiming ownership in property, certainly that is available, as you pointed out, in the law already. If it was a jewelry, multiple owners claiming it could be coins or jewelry, they would have that process available to them. This bill is specifically directed to all property owners who are crime victims and is a broader application of the law to those situations where a crime victim is otherwise unable to get their property returned to them so they can continue on with their business or carry out their affairs. So this does not preclude the avenue of appeal that you brought up, but it, in fact, it gives property owners a right of hearing. Now, to go to your second question, do they have a right of hearing? How will that work? It takes time. This doesn't stop at all the process of a hearing being cut short because they just simply come to agreement. What this does is it puts in the law an avenue for someone to request a hearing through the Office of Victims' Rights, who then vets the requests, makes sure there's nothing in the property law that would otherwise preclude the crime victim from getting their property back, such as blood DNA evidence, a case that's currently being tried, and they are a great mitigator against and an explainer to a property owner of why the law will not allow them to go on. If they find that, in fact, it does appear, according to the law, that there is no reasonable reason for them not to have their property back, then the Office of Victims' Rights makes the request to the law enforcement agency, who then has 10 days from the receipt of that request to ask the court to schedule a hearing. Now, the court can calendar that hearing at any point that they want, but it just sets a timeline for the agency to request a hearing from the court. The court, of course, calendars things as they are able to. The answer to your third question is that the court of venue, if it's a criminal case, like you said, where they hustle the jewelers up to Nome, the bill says that the venue is the court that is trying the case. If it is a case that does not involve a criminal action, but it's just simply a civil matter, then it is the court of either the district court or superior court, wherever the property is located. But if it is a criminal example, as you gave, then the court of jurisdiction is the court that is actually trying the criminal case.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
With all due respect, that's not exactly the way I read the bill in each of those cases. And we can talk about this, but I think this really needs to be looked at a little more on that.
Do you have a suggestion, a proposal?
Well, I'd like to hear what the other witnesses have to say.
Okay. You say witnesses.
I thought we had people from law and stuff on the.
We do. Let us.
I thought Representative Lynn had a question.
Oh, Representative Lynn.
Yeah. Well, I had a couple of questions about the returned property. I can hold off on that to follow up and represent Grunberg's point.
Hold off. Okay. Andrew Walker from Soldotna, are you online with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to need you to get a little closer to the microphone. Your voice is fairly distant when we're listening.
Yeah, let me try switching phones real quick here. Hold on. It's going to beep at you. Is that any better?
That's fine. Go ahead and give us put your name on the record and give us your testimony.
Okay, my name is Andrew Walker. I am the business owner of a computer renaissance down here in Soldotna, Alaska. September 9th, 2010, we had a gentleman come in and write us a fraudulent check for a laptop, and he ripped off $12,000 and stuff from other businesses down here on the peninsula. We caught the guy a week later, and since then, my laptop has been in police lockup. Because of the nature of our business, we deal in computers and technology, things have a fairly rapid depreciation in value. a laptop that was $1,000 back in September of 2010, you know, it's probably worth $300 or $400 now. There was three different defendants involved in the case, and because of that, they could not release my property until all three defendants had been tried and prosecuted, which they still have not. So to this day, I am without my laptop, and when I do finally get it back, it'll be worth a fraction of its original value, mainly due to the slow process of the courts. The laptop was in police possession a week and a half after I lost it. So that's pretty much it. I'm just pleading for other business owners that, you know, are out money because of this process. I've also wasted a lot of personal time and business time trying to contact the DA and get information about it, you know, calling every 3 or 4 months, getting updates. But that's pretty much where I'm at.
Powerful testimony. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you for hearing me.
Victor Kester, Anchorage.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to Judiciary Executive Director's Office of Victims' Rights. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, and honorable and respected members of the House Judiciary Committee, to allow me today to offer comments and testimony with regard to Senate Bill 30. As previously stated, my name is Victor Kester. I serve the Alaska Legislature as the Executive Director of the Alaska Office of Victims' Rights. This bill, Senate Bill 30, provides crime victims of theft and other property crimes a mechanism to reasonably regain custody of their property during the course of a criminal prosecution. This bill enables a crime victim to request a court hearing to seek release, if appropriate, of his or her property recovered by law enforcement but being held as evidence during an investigation and or prosecution of a criminal matter before the courts. The OVR, the Office of Victims' Rights, stands ready and dedicated to serving the Alaska Legislature and helping Alaska crime victims, and that includes, of course, victims of property and theft crimes. Specifically, I feel Senate Bill 30 stands to achieve three principal objectives. One, it will empower the Office of Victims' Rights and the expertise of the Office of Victims' Rights to help property crime victims retrieve their property from other criminal justice agencies. In essence, Senate Bill 30 allows property and theft crime victims to come to the OVR, and we can assist them with the legal expertise and connections that we have with criminal justice agencies and knowledge of the Alaska court system. Two, I believe that Senate Bill 30 wisely aligns both with the letter and spirit of Article 1, Section 24 of the Alaska Constitution, which provides that crime victims should be treated with dignity, respect, and fairness. I believe that it is dignity to acknowledge the loss that a property crime victim has. I believe it's respectful to the crime victim of a property loss to have a means to seek redress through the court system that is fair to both the other criminal justice agencies and other parties to the criminal prosecution, and fundamental fairness in that crime victims can get the property back after appropriate, reasonable measures have been taken to document that property for prosecution purposes. Three, and most importantly, I believe Senate Bill 30 has an opportunity to achieve restorative justice on behalf of crime victims in Alaska. Restorative justice is a concept whereby the crime victim is returned to a position he or she was in prior to the criminal act in question. Here, getting the return of the property that was stolen or taken as part of the prosecution, restores, as best as one can, to their pre-crime position. The Office of Victims' Rights is very dedicated to helping Alaska crime victims receive restorative justice and the principles under dignity, respect, and fairness as found in Article 1, Section 24 of the Alaska Constitution. I'd like, if I may, respond to Representative Grunberg's three questions or just give some insight into what I think may be responsive to his inquiry. First of all, if there are multiple owners of the property, that is well recognized, that that could possibly be a difficult situation. However, if all parties are notified of a hearing or claims, and we could have a court sort the ownership issues out, if that comes in front of the court as an issue. If it is too complicated to sort out ownership, then simply the property may have to stay in evidence until that could be later resolved either in subsequent civil litigation, after the criminal prosecution, etc. But that is a well-recognized point. Two, the notion that a hearing could be potentially way down the road after a request is made for an agency to return the property. They don't return it within the 10-day period, and then the Office of Victims' Rights requests a hearing before the court, and that this would, if the hearing doesn't come within a timely fashion, we could move the court on an expedited basis under the criminal rules of procedure and to try to have a hearing forthwith, you know, we have to file an affidavit. I would see something like, we requested the return of the fishing nets. We asked for a hearing. The hearing's put off in the fall after, but the crime victim needs the hearings today so he can go fishing, essentially. We could ask for a motion for expedited consideration to try to move up that hearing date. And I think there's a mechanism among the criminal rules to do that, I'm quite certain. And the notion of where the hearing should be, I think is, it says here in the actual language of the bill, the agency shall request a hearing before the court or during the primary shall be released to the crime victim. It should either go before the court with jurisdiction of the criminal case or a district or superior court where the property is located. So where the property is located or where the criminal prosecution is occurring. And my experience in that regard is the Alaska court system is rather flexible in allowing people to participate telephonically in multiple venues, as it were, throughout the state, so that I don't think that we would have a problem participating in a court hearing that might be in a venue other than, let's say, Anchorage or one of the main judicial districts in the state. Finally, I believe that this legislation, proposed legislation, seems to aid small business owners, assist victims of property crime, allow Alaska residents to have access to the expertise of the Office of Victims' Rights, and fourth, I think this legislation wisely aligns with the principles of Article 1, Section 24 as it relates to crime victims being treated with dignity, respect, and fairness. And finally, honorable and respected members of the House Judiciary Committee, we have seen examples that mirror what the gentleman from the Peninsula testified with regard to computers. For example, we've had instances where a computer has been held in evidence, and by the time the business owner got the computer back, not only was the asset that was returned to him depreciated substantively in value, but he was also deprived use of the computer during that period. So the loss is not only the access to the depreciating asset itself, but to the use of that asset. And I feel that Senate Bill 30 would provide a means to remedy that situation on behalf of Alaska crime victims. The OVR stands ready and dedicated to serving the legislature and helping Alaska crime victims. The OVR helps crime victims obtain the rights that are guaranteed in the Alaska Constitution and statutes. The OVR advances and protects these rights when necessary and authorized by law. And we work well with other criminal justice agencies and other governmental entities in the spirit of cooperation and collaboration to help crime victims and promote the interests of justice in Alaska. It is a privilege and honor to testify before the respected members of the House Judiciary Committee in support of this proposed legislation. Thank you.
We have a question for you from Representative Lynn.
Thank you very much. I guess I can ask you. I have two or three questions here I'd like to get. I kind of looked at the bill early, or my staff did, rather. If I have a computer that was stolen or perhaps used in a crime, could there be limits on my use of it when I get it back? For example, what can you erase? Maybe the computer had illegal porn downloaded on it. I assume before I'd get it back that you would take that off of there and store it on a disk for use later on in a criminal trial. Is that true? What can I do with the computer?
Well, that's certainly an excellent question. I think there's enough room in the language of this bill to deal with complicated issues like you bring before the committee here to deal with those case-by-case basis. I think one of the important aspects of this legislation is it gets the prosecution, law enforcement, Office of Victims' Rights, and the crime victim before the court to decide what is the appropriate course to proceed in the interest of justice. To answer your question, depending on the circumstances of the case, those illegal images could be removed from the computer, stored in a device, and be used in the prosecution. The computer could then be restored to the crime victim. But in prosecutions that are as sensitive as you described, you know, I'm just being forthright with the committee. There will probably be some, additional issues that I think they could only be, raised, at a specific hearing on return of those property. I mean, it's difficult to foresee. All the implications of something like that at this time. For example, you might need to retain the computer to see what not only the images that are on the computer, but to see whether or not those images were transferred elsewhere, and therefore there may be a computer forensic analysis that actually needs to be done on the machine. In other words, the machine is a lot more complicated than something like the return of a fishing net, a trap line, or a car or tractor.
I see.
Did that answer your question, sir?
Partly. Mr. Kopp, and I had a similar question. If you copy data from a computer and put it on a thumb drive or a hard disk or something, would the defense in a court say, is that the original document, say no, it's a copy? Is that detrimental to the prosecution?
Well, the defense can always raise that argument. It's not necessarily detrimental to the prosecution as long as full discovery has occurred and the prosecution has let the defense know that we've made a mirror image. Here's the forensic protocol we used in making that image, and you have an objection to it going back to the crime victim. If those kind of discussions can happen and do happen now. Again, this bill simply gives property owners a voice if it comes to an impasse. And then directly to Mr. Lynn's question, the bill does say the court may impose any reasonable condition necessary to promote the evidentiary integrity of the property, and whatever condition the court considers necessary to maintain that integrity.
You have an additional question?
Well, I suppose you take the images out, store it someplace for the court case, and say, these images came from computer serial number so-and-so. One additional one here. If I get a piece of property returned to me, using Commissioner McCartney, and I damage the thing, would that hurt the case for prosecution later on if I damaged what was returned to me, further damaged it?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly that's a hypothetical that could occur. Anytime you take a risk on, you know, we would have to look at, you know, the spirit of the law is that it's and the court, of course, would oversee this, determining that risk. Are we going to make the victim whole or not? And is the risk of some damage worth it in this criminal case? That's why we have the court to make that determination.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Hold on. Representative Miller would like to make a comment. You want to? I think that twice now, huh? And I know why, because I know a Tammy Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to bring to the attention that this is just about a process. And if they think it's going to jeopardize the case in any fashion, then the property would not be returned. So in your case saying, well, if they could damage something, they're not going to give anything back that they think is going to jeopardize the case. The problem right now is that there is no process in place. This allows both sides to look at it and say, do we really, for instance, with the car, do we need to keep physically the car so that we have it to go forward? If they say, no, it doesn't have any impact, we can take pictures, serial numbers, all that's fine, then it gives a process for it to be returned. If there's a chance of damaging to do it, the property would not be returned.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kester, I have a couple questions for you. I see we have some fiscal notes. Do we have a fiscal note from the Office of Victims' Rights?
No. It is not foreseeable at this time that our office couldn't absorb the additional responsibilities that would emanate from this legislation that would require an increase in our budget.
Mr. Chair, the reason is because the statute in Title 24 on fiscal notes, I think, requires that any agency that's involved in a piece of legislation, even if it's a zero fiscal note, has to submit one. And I'd ask that at least by the time it gets to the Finance Committee that you have a fiscal note. That's number one. And I'm particularly...
Thank you for the wise direction.
Say again?
I apologize for interrupting. I was saying thank you for the wise direction on the fiscal note, and I will do so accordingly.
Yeah, I like the bill generally, but I do have some questions, not all of which have been answered. And I'm looking particularly at the fiscal notes we have from the Department of Law, which says the last sentence on the second page, the issues raised may be complex, particularly if defense counsel, I say, or another party, composing owner, opposes the return. And it seems to me that these could be very complex and could dwarf the criminal case entirely. And it would get to be a case of what's called replevin, which is the return of personal property. It could be all kinds of things. And this could spawn some real litigation. And particularly, if we have, to get back to the purloined jewels, we have not the jewel box just being a bunch of two jewelers, but a bunch of homes. And you could have 25 or 30 potential victims and a court trying to sort out who owned the brooch or who owned the loose stones. This would have complex factual issues. And the question, one of the questions I have is what the role of the Office of Victims' Rights will be in a situation like that. It would seem to me that probably the head of the agency would wind up in filing basically an interpleader motion asking that everybody come before the court and basically taking a position of sort of a referee in there, and the court might even wind up appointing a special master or something. This could be a very hairy issue and could involve a bunch of insurance companies and stuff too, particularly if it's a burglary gang, something like that. I know Mr. Copps had experience with that sort of thing. And I'm sort of laying out what I see some of the issues are, Mr. Chair. I see that AS 24.65.090, which is in the chapter that deals with the Office of Victims' Rights, gives the Office of Victims Advocate, and I think that's your title, authority to do regulations. I urge you, sir, to look at the language in that statute very carefully to make certain that you can and should publish regulations outlining your procedure throughout this new piece of legislation, because the way I read it, you may not have all the regulatory authority you need to establish the procedures here. And please look carefully at that. This isn't just a question of investigating findings and stuff like that, but you could find yourself right at the vortex, the epicenter, to mix my metaphors, of various things involving this kind of a situation. And I would ask any comments you have. I don't really expect you to have a comment offhand, but just urge you to look at this stuff. Since this is probably the last committee of substantive referral, it'll go to finance, but that's not like the House Judiciary Committee. We are the careful committee. Any comments, sir?
Yes, I appreciate your wise guidance. I think that your remarks are well taken in terms of having to establish a series of administrative regulations that would clearly define how the Office of Victims' Rights deals with these requests to have property returned to crime victims. I do acknowledge that it could be a proverbial sticky wicket in terms of certain instances where there are multiple parties claiming ownership to multiple pieces of property, and how do you sort it out. I look to Section 1 of the bill, 1236070, Return of Property by Hearing. It says, about midway through paragraph A, the request under this subsection shall be filed by the Office of Victims' Rights on behalf of the crime victim, and emphasis added here, after the office has conducted an investigation and has concluded that the crime victim is entitled to the return of the property under factors listed in subsection C. And that would, subsection C is broken down into two parts. The crime victim has to show by preponderance of evidence that there is satisfactory proof of ownership. And if we had multiple parties claiming, you know, we wouldn't necessarily move forward with a hearing before the court, because that would, the crime victim would not meet that initial threshold burden that they own the property in question. Or two, the party that objects to the return of the property fails to provide the preponderance of evidence that the property must be retained by the agency for evidentiary purposes under the provisions of the chapter and another law. So speaking frankly, the crime victim has a mechanism under the proposed legislation to come to the Office of Victims' Rights. We then verify and check the crime victim's claim to be sure that it is, you know, in accord with the law before then making the request to the legislative agency in question within 10 days that has it. Not legislative agency, criminal justice agency, Department of Law, for example. Then if we we don't, if it's righteous claim that the crime victim has, we don't get it back from law enforcement or Department of Law after we make a request. Then we go to court. In other words, there are measures in place before we go to court to check to be sure the crime victim is, you know, proceeding in accord with the law, both in the letter and the spirit of it. In terms of letters, you know, showing that they indeed own it, and they're not and that there isn't an evidentiary purpose to continuing to keep the property. And then allows the court to hear from all sides, if we get to that hearing phase, to make the call by listening to all the participating parties about what should be done. And in some instances, the crime victim gets the property back. Sometimes it stays into evidence. But that insulates then the crime victim or the prosecution. If the judge orders it back and the crime victim takes it back and then hurts the property, I don't think that jeopardizes the case, because the crime victim is just acting in accord with an order that he received from the court. I don't know how responsive I'm being to your question. Can you give me some direction if I'm being on point here?
Mr. Chair.
Hello?
Yeah, this is Max Grimberg again. Through the chair. I must confess I'm not an expert in this bill, and I am just sort of spotting potential issues I see here. I don't have any answers today, but I think these are important issues, and I just want to be sure this is written right. It may well be, but you know, I just am raising the issues to be sure that this will accommodate what needs to be done. And I'm just kind of talking here with the members, kind of as we do on our committee. We have a collegial group here, and it may be that one question is, you're going to have this whole thing in front of a criminal judge, and this is basically a civil proceeding to determine the ownership of property between various claimants, all of whom are potential victims here, and the criminal, or the alleged criminal, is nowhere to be seen, because it's indisputable that criminal has no right to the property. So you have several potential innocent parties here who claim interest in this property, and you're going in front of a judge who's basically assigned to a criminal docket. They take priority under the 120-day rule, and this will get bumped back. And I'm not sure I don't know if we're going to have the court system here to testify how this is going to work. I don't know if it's better to put this in front of the judge herself, or have an ability for the Office of Victims Rights to refer the matter to an administrative law judge or somebody like that to determine it, where it could get a speedy resolution or a special master or something. But I can see with large and complex issues that the tail will wag the dog, and the criminal's long gone, and he's or she's in jail at Spring Creek or wherever they hang out, and the litigation goes on, and basically discovery and everything like that will have to proceed. And I just want to be sure that we have this set up so it'll work.
I respect your comments, and I appreciate, again, your wise guidance. Frankly, in my work here at the Office of Victims' Rights, this issue has been brought up relatively rarely. The reason that's why I feel that at current staffing levels, you know, executing Senate Bill 30 wouldn't require additional personnel or funding from the Alaska legislature to execute the task. And also, in the instances that we have had where people have sought return of property, it has been relatively clear not only who owns it, but why they want it back, and that there are alternative means to to documenting the evidence for criminal prosecution purposes. I think that what is wise about the legislation is that, again, it aligns with the Alaska Constitution, but also the legislation allows the Office of Victims' Rights to make a threshold inquiry into the ownership of the property, the people that are making claims to the property, the nature of the evidence, as it relates to the criminal prosecution, before it makes a request to the criminal agency to return the property to the crime victim.
Mr. Castro, I'm...
In other words, there will be instances
Mr. Castro,
the Office of Victims' Rights will make a preliminary investigation.
Mr. Castro, I'm going to interrupt you now. I wanted to get back to Mr. Kopp because I think he had some comments and we're nearing the end of the hearing. So thanks very much for your comments so far.
Thank the Chair and Mr. Representative Grunberg for his very good questions. To just conclude, I wanted to say that this bill was a three-year journey through the Senate and was parked in Senate Judiciary with three good legal minds working it over. And your questions were well asked and vetted. And like Mr. Kester said, this language has been very carefully crafted in partnership with both the Department of Law, Office of Public Defender, and other legal minds on it. And certainly, Representative Grunberg, the court would have to be given, when a request for a hearing comes before the judge can look at it, would verify that all the interested parties had been noticed. And if there were those types of legal issues, in my experience with the court, is they would calendar this hearing until a later date after the substantive issues, if it was a criminal case, had been dealt with. If it was that sticky of a matter that you raised, that they would calendar it accordingly.
I have one more question. Question came up, if they return the property and you damage it, I thought once they return the property, you could drive it off a cliff, drive it in the ocean, sell it. They've already scrubbed it for the information they want.
Certainly, Chair, the context that Representative Lynn asked the question is wasn't in the context of him intentionally damaging property that the court had directed conditions of taking care of that. In other words, if the court returned the property to the crime victim and another interested party said that they would need it for evidentiary purposes at a later time, I could see the judge in a scenario saying, yes, the crime victim's right to the property is paramount here, but we are going to put conditions. You can't sell it. You can't give it to anybody else because we may need it later.
Right. But you could use it. You could wear it out. You could
yes.
Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, I think it's a good bill. Don't get me wrong. But I just would like maybe to visit with Doug Gardner and see if there's any other issues we have overlooked or anything on this. And I don't need much time, but I don't know enough about this. And they may be all will-o'-the-wisps that I'm saying. And you'd be welcome to participate in that with Miles, who's sitting in the back there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you want to do.
Carbonetti, can you come forward? Or willing to come forward? So gracious of you to tolerate us.
I'm happy to come forward.
Thank you.
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law.
Which has that unusual, not unusual, but physical note that it's wide open.
Our fiscal note, I believe, considers the fact that there will be cases where the prosecution thinks it should not return the property because of the evidentiary value of the item, and that will cause litigation and a hearing, and we expect that we will be representing police agencies in a number of cases.
Some of these other questions that were asked.
One thing I would like to make clear that I heard something said, I'm not sure which witness said it, but they said it only applied to property crimes. It does not. It applies to all criminal matters, not just property crimes, this bill. Mm-hmm. You know, you will have issues arising, you know, in 2010, the legislature passed the requirement for preservation of evidence mm-hmm. in homicide and sex offenses, sex offense crimes, requiring the police to keep evidence for 50 years or until a crime is solved. So there are conflicting issues that are going to have to be litigated, you know, the police agency and our agency is not going to want to violate these requirements of, and that's found in AS 1236-200. So there will be issues, and you know, even if the prosecution wants to return property to a victim, we can't return it if the defense doesn't want us to. We have to keep it because it has to be used for trial, and then that causes problems on appeal and the possibility of their of you know, reversal and retrial. So every case is a little bit different, and so that's why we have a indeterminate fiscal note, because we expect to be representing the police.
And page 2, line 6, which begins letter C, at the hearing, and Representative Grunenberg said, what if there is no hearing? Should we modify that language somehow?
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming there's a hearing because there's a dispute, and the court wouldn't order, and you know, there wouldn't be a court order unless there was a dispute and a hearing, so I guess I would not.
Mr. Chair,
okay.
I read the bill again. I was wrong. The only time there's a hearing is if there's a dispute, and that's at the bottom of page 1, and I think that the bill's well-crafted to indicate that. That it's only if there's a dispute that the office or somebody requests the hearing. Sometimes might it be another sovereign that owns the property? For example, would you maybe ever have some federal property that's being held and a federal agency would have an interest in its return or something like that? I'm not trying to be difficult. I just want, this thing has more wrinkles than a hippopotamus. And I want to be sure that we know.
I could think of another example. Now they're kind of slick, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't know, 707 or something.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I just want to be sure.
Through the chair, I can imagine. I guess I'd have to give it some thought about what would the effect of the property being owned by the federal government.
Okay. Committee members, any comments? Anybody think we should hold this bill over for another hearing?
It's up to the committee. I still have some unanswered questions.
So be your preference to hold it over till Wednesday?
Yeah, I want to talk to Doug Gardner.
Got it.
I kind of stick my nose into it every now and then.
Well, we don't want to let it out if it isn't...
Does anybody, do you think that I'm
No, I don't think you are. I think I wouldn't mind holding it over. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't solo on this.
And I would like the folks who are involved in this to contact my office so we can try to set a telephone call at your convenience the next day and try to get these questions answered. And if anybody has any questions or want to participate, I'll be happy to coordinate that.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, Senator, you want to come forward and chat about this?
Senator Fred Dyson, you originated this bill, I suspect before I got here you heard lots of this anecdotal stuff. Our law clearly takes the stance that we're going to do all we can with the victims. Representative Berkowitz and I became very good friends in the years, and remain so, and we worked hard about 8 or 10 years ago to install in our law the whole concept of restorative justice. Our law is clear that unless there's an overriding reason, get the property back to its rightful owner. The rightful owner is a legitimate question, but really outside the purview of this bill. If indeed there's an ownership question, there's another method of dealing with that. We have had no public safety people object to this. We have know of only one incident where the troopers have had an issue with it, but there are several municipal police departments. All of them said, yeah, that's what we're supposed to do. You know, because it isn't a priority for us, we've jogged our heels, we didn't do the right thing, so on. I'm sure, Mr. Representative Grimberg, that you've been in situations where the plea bargaining, the owner of the property desperately needs it back, those defending the perp will say, well, we'll cut you a deal here. You know, we plead this down to a lesser thing, we'll say it's okay to get the persons back. I'm sure you've never run into those kind of...
Not in a criminal case, but in a divorce case, the child's often held on.
Yeah. Been there, done that, seen that, and so on. This only provides a method for the owner of the property, clearly proved, to be able to have a means of... Indeed, the clear intent of the law is not being followed. And I can tell you that we've had this thing up for 3 years. We have worked with Ms. Carpinetti and the Department of Law extensively and with the justice system. And most of the major urban law enforcement people and the troopers and what we put before you, we think has been thoroughly vetted by all the folks up and down the line. And Doug, as you know, is new in his job at this level and may not be up to speed upon it as his predecessor was. All I got to say.
Well, thanks, Senator. I just want you to know I give a lot of deference to the committee members, and if they feel they have some unanswered questions, I really, as the chair, hesitate to advance a bill to finance, which is usually overloaded with things to do, that isn't in a form that's as close to perfect as we can make it. So with that, we're a little bit late. I'm going to hold the bill till Wednesday, and hopefully we'll pass it out Wednesday.